I just believe in the process, and we're going to win going through the process.
Now, Bills Mafia, it's time for the main event. So sit back and enjoy the show.
Bills Mafia, welcome to the Red, White and Buffalo Blues, a UK Bills podcast, Bills news with a UK twist. You've got Robin.
Good evening.
You've got myself, Matt, from my hotel in London. And we are just days away. Days away from London and days removed from a, would we say a thrashing? Or
I
squishing
think you
of the thing?
Yeah. I mean, I always like to say trammelling of the mammals. Trammel the mammals, because the dolphins aren't a fish. But, it was. It really was. And there's no better way to kind of warm up for the London game than the game that we had. It's promised to be, you know, it was billed as the game of the season, the game that the Dolphins were going to show who the best team of the AFC East were. If they win, they go two games ahead, like we said last week. And at 14-all and 21-14, five first possessions, five touchdowns, I was thinking, well, this is a good game. This is gonna be a 45-42. Whoever can get a field goal instead of a touchdown, they're just not going to be able to stop scoring. But you could see, even in that second Dolphins possession, that the Bills were getting stronger. You could see that the defense was picking them up. And I was just thinking, well, as long as the offense can keep scoring, I think the defense is going to get a couple of stops. And kind of how it proved, wasn't it? And then when they got the ball back, there was a quick exchange of punts, wasn't there? And then the Bills scored with Diggs, 28-14, got it back again, 31-14 at the half, and then they just had them.
I mean, to be honest, I didn't really expect it. I expected us to win. I was quite confident we were going to win, but I didn't expect that sort of domination, especially when you saw the first five drives combined. Got your thing. You're thinking how and who was going to make that adjustment to actually to stop it. And the Bills, McDermott seemed to do it with McDaniel just not knowing how to adapt. And I think I was tweeting all the way through it and all that, saying, you've got to take away the middle, take away his first read, and that's pretty much what...
Yeah, you're reading that out of the middle, yeah.
Yeah, and that's pretty much what happened. Towards the end, he was actually struggling down the middle, and that's where they gained most of their yards, can get it on the separation and on the slants. Yeah. We take that away, and bang, he's got to now throw out to the numbers, and he's not... Okay, he's all right at them, but he's not amazing at doing it and actually getting completions. And really, we nullified this offense. I think it's a blueprint that other teams are going to have to look into.
Yeah, well, as long as they've got the personnel to do it. I mean, you just had every player on the defense was just phenomenal. It was a complete team effort. It's weird that you compliment the defense first, but you look at a 48-20, and I think it's probably more impressive that we kept the Dolphins to 20 than we scored 48. As weird as it sounds, you sort of look at 48-20 as an offensive dominance, which it was, but keeping the Dolphins, that team, to 20 points, having that figured out. You said it last week. It was Frazier, wasn't it? It was McDermott had to come in and reset this thing and get them pointed in a slightly nastier, you know, aggressive, furious kind of way. But my God, they are absolutely, they're a wrecking crew now, that defensive line.
And that defense and holding it to only 20 points, that came without Jordan Poyer. Yeah, it came out. Jordan Poyer, Taylor Rapp, he has had decent games, but has not been the world beater.
You're second in tackles. Just behind Milano.
And then you've got, and obviously Damar Hamlin, who hasn't played since January or no, December.
Yeah.
And all that. And you're kind of thinking,
January second game against the Bengals.
Yeah. Then you're looking at that and thinking, with Tua loving running down the middle, and throwing it down the middle, that they're going to have a field day. But it's just the adapting that the that McDermott actually did, and the aggressiveness that he showed in that attacks that really let us go, let us cook, and let us be that dominant. And I think it was the first game where Tua really had pressure on him, and it was that bad that obviously Hill and Waddle pretty much sat from pretty much the rest of that second quarter, fourth quarter.
Well, they were very quiet, weren't they? I mean, the whole game Tyreek Hill only had three catches, Jalen Waddle had four. But if you can't find them straight away, then he struggles, doesn't he? And I think they will figure that out. They're a team that's made a breakthrough, that's made an impact with what they do with this timing based first read, get it out quickly. And hey, it was very successful for three games. But now that element has probably been figured out. They're going to have to find a plan B. They're going to have to find something else to do, because they couldn't really run the ball. That was the thing. Oh, well, if you take away the first read, they're still going to be able to run the ball. They're still going to be able to do other stuff as well. And that kind of, they started to look ordinary. And you said just then about throwing outside the numbers. Yeah, they made a few catches there, but ultimately consistent pressure up the middle, blocking the run game, keeping him penned in, see what he does under pressure. You know, what was he sacked four times? I don't have the hits or the pressures in front of me, but I'm guessing it was pretty. I'm guessing it was pretty severe. Because he got dropped a few times, the lad. And
yeah, he had at least two sacks on him. Because Russo
four for 31, according to.
But I mean, it just shows. I mean, we talked about. And we talk about it every week. Winning games means winning in the trenches.
Yes.
And yes, there was a sack given up by the offensive line. I think it was Spencer Brown that actually lost his man on there. But they still kept him clean. He didn't get knocked down or anything like that, and still had enough to actually make passes. So I think the whole tackle, the whole trenches is something that the Bills struggled last year, especially on the offense. But now we're starting to turn into a bit more of a strength, and they face some strong defenses the first 4 weeks.
Oh yeah.
Okay. The Raiders won not so much. Only Max Crosby really stood out on them. But you've got three other defenses that have strong fronts, front four, front seven, and this unit actually has held up quite well. And that can only bode well going into the season.
Oh yeah.
And seeing obviously where they go from there.
Well, it's become apparent as well. I mean, even if you look at the first game against the Jets, I mean, that Jets defense is legitimately terrifying. I mean, there's been a whole riot of on social media about what flags should or should not have been called against the Chiefs and how close the Jets came. But there's no two ways about it. I mean, Mahomes threw two picks against the Jets. You know, they're good. They are genuinely good, and the fact that our offensive line recovered and didn't play well against that Jets defense line, but has recovered and improved in games 2, 3, 4. It's not necessarily the strongest part of the Bills offense, I would say. But what I would say is that it was certainly the concern for being the weakest part of the team. And they've shored that up. They've assured like a certain level of competence of keeping Josh clean. Yeah, they're going to give up a couple of sacks for the odd game, and that's fine. They were good enough to keep Josh clean to get five touchdowns out of the guy, three to Diggs, one to Davis, one for Jimbo. So it's good enough. And it'd be interesting against Jacksonville. We'll get to Jacksonville in a minute, but. They're so-called slightly weaker.
We just can't stop talking about Josh Allen. I mean, he's what do you call it? He's the offensive player of the year of the week again.
Yeah,
for the Bills.
12th time.
11th time. No, 12th time. Yeah.
There's 12. And fifth following a game against the Dolphins.
Yeah. And I don't know if you saw it, but there was a, I think someone tweeted a photo. They changed the Wikipedia entry for the Dolphins to put owner and then put Josh Allen.
I've seen the one with Tua hanging on Josh Allen's shoulders like a toddler, and Josh is like taking him around like his daddy. That's, yeah. I mean, there shouldn't be anything in it why a particular player should play well against a particular team. There shouldn't be anything in that. The Bills, obviously, we play them twice every year, and Josh is in his sixth season, so he's played them 12 times, give or take. And he's 10-2 now, isn't he? And the two they lost was one where Charles Clay drops one in the end zone, and then that crazy game, the Heat, where they muffed two, they didn't get two field goals set up, and it was just crazy because half the defense was injured, and people were getting carried off with heat exhaustion. So, but they played through different coordinators, different head coaches, different quarterbacks, and yet there is something about the Dolphins that Josh Allen just seems to raise his game, and he just seems to play on another level. I don't understand. It shouldn't matter. Maybe it is a personal thing for him, but I don't understand why it is, but he just plays assuringly, and like he's never going to make a mistake.
I mean, he's against a Vic Fangio defense. The last two games he's played against them, he's yet to concede, he's yet to throw an interception. He's thrown for 679 yards, six touchdowns. Rushed 50 yards with three touchdowns, 2-0 against a Fangio-based defense in the last two, with 96 combined points. And just against the Dolphins, he's literally flawless almost.
Well, he's 158.3. I have no idea why that's the best rating, why they can't just somehow make it 100. Don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, you don't get much better than that, do you?
He's only the second player in NFL history with 300+ pass yards, 4 touchdowns, 1 rush touchdown, and a perfect rating in a single game. Do you know who the other one was?
Was that Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah.
Yeah. Damn it,
you probably saw that one.
We probably read the same stat, but it's funny, isn't it? I mean, that's pretty elevated company. No one, but it's also, people around the league won't say anything bad about Aaron Rodgers, will they? So
no, and it's also that he's thrown multiple pass touchdowns in 12 straight games against the Dolphins.
Yeah.
I think I had more on there to do with it, but it just seems like when it comes to Dolphins, he just wants to show him who's the boss. But
yeah.
More touchdown, combined touchdowns that he had in completions.
Oh God, yeah, no, that's a killer of a stat, isn't it?
Yeah,
more touchdowns than missed pass, and it's not even that the passes were even his fault either, because Shakir dropped an absolute beauty that you saw the replay. He absolutely should have caught that as well. He didn't really. There was barely any that he actually missed. They were drops rather than bad throws in almost all games.
And I mean. I mean, you've just got to give it up to him. I mean, obviously, he's got a franchise record for completion percentage, which was 84%, one of the highest around on there. But yeah. You just look at what he can do, and now he seems to be playing responsible football.
Like a grown-up, yes.
Yeah, that he's actually a lot more... He shows a little more poise and dissects the team, gives what the teams give him.
Yeah.
And that's what we need from Josh.
Yeah. I think it helps that Ken Dorsey looks a lot more settled in his role as well. It seems like he's got the team running with the formations and the personnel that he wants. As well, it seems like he's got the players that he wants. It seems like it's his team now. It's his offense.
Yeah,
and you have to give him some credit because so many people just wanted him fired at the end of the season, didn't they? And it just goes to show he just needed a bit more time just to get the thing installed. And needed a week one to sort of get it going as well. But now you've got 2, 3, and 4. Now you've just got to keep the thing turning, keep the wheel turning, and just keep stacking the wins.
We talked last week about how is it Frazier compared? Yes. Is it Frazier McDermott and all that? Is obviously Brian Daboll.
Yeah.
And Dorsey, Josh Allen. Is it Josh Allen making Daboll and Dorsey good, or is it Dorsey now actually finding the strength and having learned to actually bring out the best in Allen? Because we've seen what the Giants did a couple of days ago and what they're doing all season.
Yeah.
Is it Josh Allen making him?
Yeah, it's very easy to sort of be reductive in that and say, oh, it was Josh, and before they were saying, oh, it was Daboll, and now Dable's gone, Josh hasn't been any good since Daboll left, and that kind of thing. I really think it's a mix. Yeah, I really think it's the mixture of ingredients. It's the OC, yes, it's the quarterback, it's also the offensive line, and it's also the receivers, and it's also the defense necessarily either being able to make those plays so you don't have to put the team on your back. And I think it's everything working together. And even like special teams and having like the advantage of shorter fields than you would otherwise need, not having to start at your own 10-yard line all the time and that kind of thing. I do think it's a mix. If you look at the Giants, there's bits you see of Daniel Jones and he's running around for his life a lot like Josh Allen would kind of thing at times. And you wonder who... If you know Saquon Barkley's not been able to play for the Giants for a bit, as you take him out of the team, well, that means any defense just goes, well, they're going to have to throw it now, don't we? So they put more into coverage, so it's harder for Jones to find his targets. How many targets does he really have that are legitimate receivers? He's got one or two, maybe. If you take his best receiver out, it's a long day. I think it's always a combination of factors, and right now the Giants just don't have anyone.
Yeah,
and we play them in a couple of weeks.
No, exactly. It's what next week after
Jacksonville, and that's the Sunday late game.
But I mean, you talk about that, and then you talk about obviously the wide receiver core on there, and the stat I'm just trying to find is between Diggs and Davis against the Dolphins, they had a perfect rating when targeted.
Yes, they. So Diggs, according to this, is 6 from 7. But yeah,
And you just now thinking that has it now clicked for Gabe Davis? Because he's getting there now, and I think I saw one stat. Where is it?
3 for 61. And
the kind of thing,
if you get 5 for 70 or 80, that's good. You got 3, and then you got like 7 for 100 or something in the other game.
Yeah,
I think as well as finding the balance as well, because last week Diggs had about half of the receiving catches. This week it's about a third.
He got
6 out of 20. 6 out of 21. So just about a third.
He's got 12 catches for 220 yards and 3 touchdowns through the first 4 games. He is projected on pace for 51 catches, 935 yards and 13 touchdowns. That's a prediction and pace that he's actually going at the moment.
Interesting.
Okay. And people were talking about him obviously not being number two or struggle to be number two. But I think it's really now started to click for him. And even when Diggs isn't there, you've still got enough. You've still got something in Gabe Davis that will actually come up. And I think he's solved his or started to solve his drop issues.
Yeah.
And all that. But it's not just His pass game, it's on some of the blocks he's come in and actually blocked on screens and all that. He is like a Robert Woods type player.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And that's what is keeping him in there. And that's what makes him a standout wide receiver.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's probably got slightly less pressure on him as well because he's still got Kincaid. I mean, Kincaid and Knox, they combined for 5 catches as well. You've still got Sherfield and Harty combined for 4 catches as well. So he's coming in with 3 catches. So perhaps the load isn't as much for him. So he's not in demand as much.
And yeah.
You've still got, obviously, Diggs. You've still got that. You've even got James Cook made that hell of a catch as well. And Latavius Murray caught 2 as well. Mm. So you'd be with that level of variety as well. You've got, what, 4 potential receivers. You've got 2 running backs and 2 tight ends. Josh has got 8 targets potentially as it's going. It's he's probably not going to be a true wide receiver 2 because there's just so many other options to throw to. But as long as he's able to contribute when he is on the field, yeah, brilliant.
I think it's just the whole balance now. It seems like we have got that balance in that offense. Because we obviously we'll talk a bit in a minute about running backs, but you just see the fact that you see some of the stats that come out about Josh since starting the 0-1. I mean, since week 2, week 3, week 4. He's first in adjusted completion percentage with 85.2%. Total touchdowns, 10. He's first in that. 125.8 passer rating, first in that. What else we got? Off play action this year, 27 of 33, 451 yards, first. 5 touchdowns, no interceptions. A perfect, somehow, 158.3 passer rating. You're just seeing the evolution of this offense and really, really showing that anything can happen. And we go into the running back situation and people were saying, oh, it's why are we not talking more about the running back? The running backs are rubbish and all that. But they're the ones that really are showing that we've now got a run game in there. I mean, James Cook's on 296 rushing yards at 5 yards per carry, 1 touchdown off the 56 carries. Damian Harris, okay, he's only got 80 yards off 19, but 4.2 yards per carry and a touchdown.
That's good. That's good. That's good. Those are hard yards.
And Latavius Murray, 17 carries, 77 rushing yards, 4.5 yards per carry and 2 touchdowns.
Yeah.
So we've got that run game now going. It's now just getting that whole balance sorted. And I think now this offense is now going to be hard to score.
It's going to be extremely hard to stop. I mean, you look at the breakdown. I'm just looking at it now from the game. Rushing attempts. They had 29 carries, attempts at throws, 25. So you've got a 25 to 29 spread there of rushes to passes. They're committing to the run on first down. I'm totally happy with that. I don't care what anyone says. I'm even happier that they go for the second down as well. Roma made the point on the commentary as well that they're still able, even in the red zone, to pick up like 3 or 4 yards on first down when you get inside the 30 yards. That's incredible because it gets so hard to pick up yards whether they're still able to keep the drives going. The only thing really that's left to say is just keep it going. They always talk about getting hot at the right time and that kind of thing. I still think the offense can get better. I still think they think that the offense can get better. And at this point, I think it's just about, I'm not even worried that they've had this thing of the past couple of years of talking about, oh yeah, stack wins, let's just play the next game and let's just get. I think it's that lesson's actually been learned now. And while I'm not going to underestimate Jacksonville, I don't think they're going to swagger into this game and just think that they can. I think they're just going to go, okay, we're going to go there. We're going to play our game. We're going to play the offense that we know how to play. We're going to run it when we run it. We're going to take the throws that are there, and we're going to do. And our defense is going to cause them problems, and then we're going to get the win, and we're going to go out. And you just hope. And we haven't said anything about injuries yet, and maybe we'll say a word about Trey White. But it's at this point, it's like, okay, I think we've got the identity of the team now. Now we just keep doing it. Well, just keep rolling on.
Yeah. I mean, as I say, it shows, because obviously the run game now is getting the pass, it's getting the play action. Read out the stats for the play action. He's first in the categories. But again, it's the evolution. Last year in yards after catch, they were 19th in the whole league.
Oh, yeah. Well, where are we now?
Fifth.
Oh, really?
With 529 yards after the catch. I think Miami are probably top, but that's Miami. But first 4 weeks, we've improved our yards after catch, and that's something that really now is really ingrained in and what they worked hard on to do. Yeah. And one other shout out on offense again, O'Torrence and Brown.
Oh, God,
every single snap again.
Yeah.
So the fourth straight week, they've played 100% all snaps. And for O'Torrence, I mean, how the hell did we get him in the second round? He's been up against his powerhouse. He's up against Christian Wilkins. And he didn't register a hit or anything.
Does it feel like Osiris Torrence has been playing for us for about 3 years?
Yeah.
It feels like he's been here my whole life. I remember they joined and they went, oh, yeah, he'd probably be a good right guard. And obviously, yeah, let's see how it goes. And goes into the training camp. And, okay, well, he might be starting a right guard, mightn't he? Well, you know, let's see how it goes. And Ryan Bates, obviously, he's going to be there as a back. And he's not even phased, is it? I will say maybe less flowers because he was more established players. But Connor McGovern seems to have slotted in as well. Mm. He doesn't seem let much by him either. I mean, this is the odd one. I mean, like you mentioned it, Spencer Brown's let the odd one pass them. But this offensive line is so much better than it was last year. And I don't know if it's Spencer Brown's fit and he's confident and he's got the bit between his teeth, but it just seems like the line is just operating. And there seems to be a lot less injuries as well. They seem to be rotating the line last year a lot more. It just seems you're getting the same five guys playing and settle and working together that's probably doing it as well.
I mean, to be honest, the whole offense, I mean, okay, they took out, towards the end, they took out McGovern, Dawkins and Morse, replaced them with Bates, Van Der Mark and Edwards.
Yeah,
but it's still, you didn't still see that drop off on there. So whatever Chrome has done, I mean, Chrome has had a nice, good full season with them. He's actually been able to rejuvenate it, and again, it shows quite a lot. And I mean, obviously, it's very hard for a guard to get rookie of the year in the NFL, but if anything, he should be in consideration. So I don't think he's given up. I think he's given up like one sack or something like that. It's like the first game. But since then, he's been almost flawless.
Yeah, I mean, it's the problem with those awards is they're always just beauty contests, aren't they? I mean, there was a certain predictability that Josh Allen would get the offensive player of the year because it's always a quarterback. It's always a quarterback that wins the MVP. Bijan Robinson's probably going to win the offensive rookie of the year, or you know, it's going to be one of those sort of glamour kind of guys. Maybe CJ Stroud or something, you know, because he looks like he's playing really well for the Texans. They played brilliant the last two games. Mm. It's always that way, isn't it? If the awards go down to O-lineman rookie of the year. Yeah, you've got to think that he's in the conversation for it.
Yeah.
Do you have a word on our two ones to watch?
Before we do the go into the review on the Jacksonville game. Yes. Obviously, the one thing we've obviously got to talk about is this defense. Obviously, not helped with the injury to Trey White, and we wish him the best on there.
Genuinely gutted for him as well. Nicest guy on the team, isn't he? Devoted.
And Achilles 1 year in ACL last year.
Yeah.
Let's hope whoever he actually gets the right to care. And obviously the guys that looked after Aaron Rodgers, because obviously he's back walking, okay, with a boot on.
Yeah.
And they did a weird thing, and that was literally a few weeks after he actually done it.
Yeah.
Trey can do the same thing, but it's going to make an interesting discussion now, because it's more than likely Elam's going to be, is going to be, what you call it, activated on that. But now you're going with Jackson and Benford as your starting wide receiver, starting cornerbacks.
Assuming Benford's okay for this week.
Yeah, he didn't practice today with a shoulder and all that. But is there really a drop-off in there? There's someone that we should be worried. I mean, there's a few decent cornerbacks still in the free agency market, but the trade deadline's the end of the month. Could you see potentially a trade?
I'll tell you what I think. No.
No?
Because I think, assuming Benford's okay, I think they will sign someone to the practice squad. But if you think we've got Dane Jackson, high floor, I will stick my neck out for Dane Jackson, always do. I think he's a quality backup. I think this is possibly Kyrie Elam's chance to get a run at the team. He'll certainly be active at the very least. And behind him, I think they may activate Jamarcus Ingram to the active roster. You've still, I think Cam Lewis is still hanging around.
Yeah.
You've still potentially, if you had to, you could go to Saran Neal if you needed to. You've still got the thing. But I think the biggest reason why I don't think we'll see quite so much of a drop-off, and why it wouldn't be as disastrous as why it won't be as big a hit as it was in 2021, is because I think the pass rush, defensive line and linebacker is so good that I don't think you need outstanding cornerback play. It's still great to have. You're still handy to have a guy to, you know, keep Tyreek Hill quiet, and, you know, some of the, in Jamar Chase and, you know, T. Higgins, and you know, if you play the Bengals later on in the year. But I think the rest of the defense is so good that I think you can probably absorb the loss of a player, no matter how good he was. I think just on a personal level, I think we're just going to miss Trey. But I think we've got quite a lot of corners already.
I mean, before we dive in a little bit more, I mean, this is just some of the defensive stats that we've got here. Obviously, Hill and Waddle were restricted to 104 yards on 7 receptions.
Yeah.
They generated pressure. Well, no, hold on. Their pass rush yesterday pressured to 14 of his 40 dropbacks, so 35%. He had a league low of 21.2 pressure rate week 1 to 3. They recorded 4 sacks, 9 quarterback hits, and Miami entered the game only allowing 1 sack and 5 quarterback hits. And the highest graded, they had 3 players that were highly graded by PFF, which is Daquan Jones at 91.2, Greg Rousseau at 73.7, and Matt Milano at 73.1. You've got a defense that dominated and currently tied for first in total sacks with 16. That's probably now gone down thanks to Seattle ragging on.
They really had their way with him, didn't they?
But you look at these sack numbers here. It's a very mixture. Leonard Floyd, 3.5 sacks, and then a defensive end. Ed Oliver, defensive tackle, 3 sacks. Russo and Edge, 3 sacks. Daquan Jones, 2.5 sacks as a defensive tackle, and more of a 1 tech. Bernard, 2 sacks. Epinesa, 1 sack. Jordan Phillips, 1 sack. It's not just one person getting it. It's multiples.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't know where they're going to come from, do you?
Yeah.
Because there's a couple of corner blitz, McDermott was calling as well. Like, even if you think you can cover the front four, they've still got guys coming from the outside to get you as well. There's so many ways that this defense can hurt you, which is why I sort of think that Trey was brilliant and remains brilliant, and hopefully he'll be brilliant in the future, because we didn't have a very good pass rush. The quarterback was in the pocket. He could pick out his favourite receiver. And then you're relying on a quality corner like Trey to cover the man and break the pass up. It's perhaps less essential now, because there's got so many ways of disrupting the quarterback.
Yeah, I think you also look at it. I mean, we said that what was it? Where's this chart? We said you take away his read, take away the middle and all that. The majority of Tua's throws against the Bills were to, was he left-handed? So to his open side, so to the left. There was barely any throws. There was like one, two, three, about four or five throws that were between numbers.
Yes.
So it shows that this offense, this defense is really, really grappling with it and actually really making a making a mark. And when I said about he was the Tua in the first half was pressured on 42.1% of his dropbacks, which was Leonard Floyd generated in the first half 5 pressures on 11 pass rushes for 45.5%. That just shows that it is a McDermott defense, and Frazier, hot take, I know, was holding this team, this offense back, this defense back.
It maybe needed somebody to take it to the next level, and who better than the head coach himself? Yeah, sure.
But I mean, I can't. It was waxing lyrical on there.
We haven't even mentioned. I mean, like when I said two players a minute ago, we obviously picked two players to watch for the Dolphins game. I mean, we didn't even get the chance to mention just how good Rousseau was during the game. Yeah. I mean, you mentioned Daquan Jones. Daquan Jones barely gets a mention during the commentary during the game, but you can see he's been incredible. For us, there's barely even a bad player on the team.
And one person we haven't mentioned who's back trained now is Von Miller. I mean, this defense
we haven't even mentioned him.
This defense already this season has generated 46% of pressure, second highest in the league, 12% sack rate, highest in the NFL, blitz only just 16% of plays, which is the second lowest in the NFL, but we're still getting the results.
Yeah, it's a great problem to have, isn't it? It means you can work him in slowly as well. You don't need to rush him back. You can make him active. You can train with him. You can bring him on for a few plays here and there. You don't need to do a huge amount with him. You can just ramp him up slowly. And also I'd always be wary almost of sort of upsetting what's working at the moment. I honestly wouldn't even want to introduce anything. I'm sure they'll think of a way of doing it, and maybe that won't happen, but my God, when you think that Von Miller could come back as well.
Let's go on to our two players then. So you had
Damien Harris.
Yeah.
6 runs for 29 yards. And the point, I mean, I said this in the podcast at the time, it was more the point of we need to still be able to run the ball. I was pretty confident that the passing offense would work, but I just wanted to see that we could continue to run the ball, and we can. Couldn't be happier there. Six runs for 29 yards. Again, you don't need to be Christian McCaffrey. You can just keep that offense on the field. Keep picking up 2 run plays and 1 pass. We'll move the change. You'll get those first downs. And the passing game is still there when you need it. It's just putting the gas in the tank. So I love that, and I just love that the running game has just got up another notch or two. So that's great. And my other one was Greg Rousseau, because I was making the point about trying to use his long arms to disrupt Tua at the line of scrimmage, which he did, and they managed to put him off his first read, which they did. And yeah, he got three tackles, got two sacks, two tackles were lost, obviously. One pass defended and two quarterback hits. So again, a fantastic day's work for him. And, you know, he's really kind of blossomed into a really serious defensive end.
I can't remember. You point out, because I'm on my phone doing this, who I had. Who did I have?
Oh, you asked me in the chat. So I am now going to look it up. So we shall now, I'll now play for time. I remembered one of them, and I said that go for the that's me being quarantined. You said McGovern,
yeah,
and Benford.
Okay, so I mean, both of them did have
Oh, Matt's gone, so I'm going to have to do my musical interlude while Matt is back. Oh, no, he's back, thank God. No one wants to hear my singing voice.
Yeah, but no, I mean, they have solid games. And again, we talked about the offensive line and how it's done. And I say, McGovern, Morse, and O'Torrence, they're probably the strongest interior offensive line we've had in years.
Probably not since the sort of Rich Incognito days. You know that sort of Eric Woods kind of time, isn't it? With that interior offensive line, I can't think of anyone we've had since then. It's been there.
And obviously Benford being Benford, actually has actually impressed. Obviously, he had a shoulder injury, but he came back and he was still part of that offense, that defense that held this Miami offense and adjusted really well to it.
Yeah.
So let's move it on quickly, because I say I'm on my phone at the moment and I've got that.
The game we've kind of been waiting for, that is from a UK Bills standpoint, the Bills in London, Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Lovely stadium, I will say.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, but I'm not looking forward to it being a West Ham fan.
Well, you just gotta push out the jive, I think, and bring in the love. It's a lovely stadium, and it gives us a taste of what the new Bill Stadium is going to look like as well, because it's built by the same people.
I mean,
so yeah, you don't like Tottenham, but you can like the stadium.
Yeah, so I mean, is it gonna hurt the Bills that the Jags have stayed the second week? So stayed the week and all that, and the Bills are coming over Thursday night.
Yeah, I think it will help the Jags to play a bit better. I don't think it will hurt the Bills to do that. I think they're too professional at this point. What I heard is that they're chartering a plane, so they're not going to be squeezed up with their knees up and the seat in front of them and crying baby and, you know, some guy sitting next to them who won't shut up. You know, they are going to be chartering a plane from Buffalo to Heathrow. So, you know, it's not going to be quite the same sort of flight that it would be for the likes of you and me flying over there. So I think they're probably going to be fine. I think they'll land on Friday. I think what they'll do is do a regular sort of session Friday, get to bed Friday, and then wake up UK time Saturday and, you know, and stay on.
I can probably tell you what they're planning on doing, how they're planning to do it. Where is it? When is... they're coming in on Thursday night. Oh, there it is. Let's go down there. They're coming through there, having a walkthrough, practicing on Friday and having a walkthrough on Saturday.
Yeah, that sounds... Sounds about right. I think they're experienced enough now. It's it's slightly further than it would be if they were, say, flying to Seattle or to San Francisco. That's not a short flight either. So, you know, but Buffalo to Heathrow is probably about seven or eight hours. It's not huge. They've got enough good players. You know, looking at the Jaguars, they've got some good players. You know, Travis Etienne's pretty good. Calvin Ridley's pretty good. Their right tackle, Anton Harrison, Chris Jones really had his way with him in that thing. I think the Bills should have enough to do well. I think if they were two very similarly matched teams, I think you could possibly give Jacksonville the edge. But I think there'll be enough Bills fans there to make it feel like a Bills home game. There'll be enough to get through.
Does the fact that Trey White obviously is not going to play and Jordan Poyer at the moment seems back practicing?
Limited today, but he's not 100%, is he?
If he doesn't go, do you still feel confident that they can hold it? Because I mean, obviously they've got Calvin Ridley, Christian Kirk has his own stuff, and Evan Ingram is a top tight end, not an elite one, but a very serviceable and dependable one. And even Zay Jones has had a good season and had last good few seasons. So they've got weapons on there.
They're not a team to be underestimated. They can score points. But again, you look at the results they've had. They're 2-2. They had a pretty good win against Indianapolis. They were pretty poor against a not terribly good Chiefs team so far, and he managed to put 9 points up against them. Had an absolutely honking loss against Houston, although Houston against CJ Stroud, but they only put 17 points up against Houston, and had a good win against Atlanta, but almost let them back in. I don't know if you watched any of the game; it wasn't great. But Atlanta were bloody awful in the first half, and actually sort of, you know, recovered a little bit and looked like they were going. So yeah, they're a team that can score points. I just feel that even with Taylor Rapp coming in for Poyer, even with Benford and Jackson, if we've got the bulk of our, I mean, I know that Floyd is again he's had a vet rest, but he's not 100%, but he should be right to go for Sunday. I'm not seeing anything else from Ed Oliver, Daquan Jones, Tim Settle, Shaq Lawson, plus Milano and Bernard. They should be able to put Trevor Lawrence off. You know, I can certainly see them getting 17 or 20 points. But you got to think that the Bills will have enough to do. I don't necessarily think it would be a blowout win, but I can see the Bills getting to the late 20s.
Yeah.
28-16, 27-16, that sort of, jumping to the predictions already. Just aware of time.
To be honest, there's not really much to discuss. I think we know what this defense can
turn
do.
Up, and they'll do enough to win. I don't think they'll want to make a statement. I think they'll be happy with a 2-score lead, and they'll just manage the game. And the thing is, we've now got a running game that can chew the clock. We've now got two tight ends that can convert on third downs, that can keep drives going. Yeah, we'll probably settle for a couple of field goals, but if you can keep Trevor Lawrence off the field and keep them punting, and yeah, they'll have a couple of good scores, because there's not really any truly terrible teams in the NFL. They'll get a couple. They'll get it. I mean, really, there are. There aren't. I mean, they'll get a couple of scores because they'll get to 17 points. But I just think the Bills they're just too good.
I think looking at it, and we'll go through in a second what our players to watch.
Our two players to watch. Yep.
I'm just obviously, you try and look at the weak spots just before, because I said I'm mindful of the battery life I've got on my phone, which I've got enough through it. But I mean, there's nothing really out there that much that scares you as much. I mean, obviously, you've got Josh Allen.
Yeah.
The other Josh Allen.
Not that one. Yeah.
Devin Lloyd, Trayvon Walker, Tyson Campbell's decent cornerback, Andre Sisco's a good ball hawk on there. There's stuff to really to try and scare you on there, but I just can't see anything that's really. Cam Robinson, their offensive tackle, probably won't play. He's only just been had his ban actually rescinded or ended. So it's hard to predict. Well, it's not hard to predict. It's good, but there's just nothing there that really scares me.
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned before about Josh Allen always playing great against Miami, and that there shouldn't really be any reason why you should play better against another team than anything else. The only thing is if Jacksonville are ever something of a bogey team. You know, we lost to them in the 2017 playoffs. There was that god-awful game. I think it was the 2021 season, the 9-6, which was just ghastly. They're not a team we've necessarily played particularly well against. We don't play them very often. We probably play them, what, every 3 or 4 years, something like that. So the last time was a couple of years ago. And then before that, obviously, there was the playoff game. I don't remember much else. They're not a team we're too familiar with. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, they pull out a couple of good plays. And Lawrence isn't a bad quarterback. He's a bit hot and cold. I can certainly see them catching us a couple of times. I can certainly see them pulling off a good rush and getting a sack or two or a breakup and, you know, dare I say, maybe a pick or a fumble or something like that where something may go against us. I can maybe see it being close in the first half, being a sort of 10-7 or a 14-10 in one way or the other at half time. But surely the quality that the Bills have, if we're not completely decimated by injuries, you got to think that we're going to make enough plays to get enough possessions to put them away by the end.
Yeah. So obviously you've given your prediction on there. Who are your two players? Who are your two players to watch, offense and a defensive player?
So my two players to watch offensively is, I'm going to say, and similar to last week, I'm going to say is Trent Sherfield, because they might. Big effort to take away Diggs and maybe to try and take away Kincaid and an easy pass and maybe to try and take away Davis. So maybe a game where Shakir or Sherfield get a few more throws going to them because they make a concentrated effort to take away Diggs, they double team him. So Sherfield is that sort of wide receiver three, maybe a player to keep an eye on. Do they get a few more throws their way?
Yeah,
defensively, my guy, Dane Jackson. It's going to be interesting to see what they ask him to do. Do they try and put him up against,
Ridley.
You know, or a Ridley or so, you know, something like that? Do they try and what's their job for Dane Jackson? Are we going to try and sort of limit his exposure, because I like him as a tackler. He's not that good as a coverage guy. So yeah, those are my two. Do they try and have him in a limiting role rather than a sort of press role?
Yeah, I think for me. I can't go. I'm struggling with trying to go with the offensive line now, which I've done both interior. Well, technically, now I can use O'Torrence again because I used him a couple of weeks ago, and the rule was we can't use him back to back. But
that is true. You could go back to him again.
But I'm not going to. I'm going with Gabe Davis.
Okay.
Because obviously they're going to try and take Diggs away. And we've seen what Davis has done the last few weeks and how he's improved and how he's actually getting better and better equipped into this offense.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a game for him because I think most of the attention will be taken up on Stephon Diggs.
Yeah.
Can Gabe Davis now separate himself from Sherfield, from Harty, from Shakir and all that, and become that genuine number two wide receiver and give us that 1-2 punch that we really, really need.
Yeah. Now, I was on similar thinking there then for offensively. Okay.
And my second, my defense, I'm actually going on defensive line.
Okay.
And we talked about him in the show, Daquan Jones.
Okay.
Because he's a one tech. He's actually been good against the run. He's obviously, he's got the pressure now and they've got the pass rush ability as noticed by the sack list that I said earlier. And he's one of those under the radar guys. And Etienne, he is a decent running back. There's no denying that. We faced a lot of good running backs, and bar the Bryce Hall run, we've not really been given up a big run game or run attempts on that. So he's my one to watch on defense.
Okay. See how we do in the run defense. Because if one was being really picky, maybe our run defense could just be tightened up just a little bit. So, yeah. Okay. Interesting.
And what did you say for score-wise? You said...
I'm going to say 21-16. It may not be the most blowout or high scoring or shootout sort of game. It might be a few more field goals than touchdowns. So I'm going to say 27-16. Bills not really in trouble, do just enough to be comfortable.
Yeah. I'm going big on the on the Bills. I mean, what was it we put up after the Jets game? What we've put up, we haven't put up less than 30 points.
No.
In the last three games, and there's nothing really on that Jacksonville defense that says any different on there.
Okay.
So I'm looking at like 34. I'm looking at 34-10.
Go for it. I was pretty bold last week with Miami because I think I said 34-24. You know. It's not going to be quite a squeaker that a lot of people are going. So, yeah, I don't think anyone had Buffalo by 28, did they? But,
no. But it shows really because it's good. It's good that we've got this defense now that actually allows us to play. And I can see that there's going to be a big enough gap, even without the loss of Trey White. We're going to be there or thereabouts. And what was it? I'll go right at the end. I'll go through a few stats quickly. They've lost. No, that's a different one. In drives, this defense. Where was that stat gone? I think in 10 of 42 drives. They've only allowed points on 23.8% of drives. That's fourth in the NFL. This offense, where's the other stats? Drives ending in a punt or turnover. Bills at 33% of all Bills drives end in a punt or turnover.
Mm-hmm.
That's third best, the worst being New England with 71%. Then what's the other one? Where's the one above it? Percentage of drives ending in points. Bills are second with 63%. 63% of all our drives ends in some points, some form of points.
Yeah.
And there's one more, I believe. Is there one more or there no more? No, they're the two main ones on there. So with that, oh well done. There we go. Third down conversions, inside field goal range. That for the Bills is actually quite low. So that one, don't really take that measurement in there. But you've got those stats on how the drives play out, and you can't see anything more than a big win and a revenge win for the last time we played the Jags in Jackson, London.
Yeah, the 2015 game, which with neither team was particularly good that year. Mm-hmm. And Jags were about 22-0 up or 21 up at half, and then we came roaring back. Actually, it ended up being a pretty good game, disappointing with the finish. with that non-existent pass interference call that, that robbed us. But no, it's pretty good. Pretty good score at the end. So yeah, we need to set that right. And then next time we come, please play anyone else. That would be, yeah, that'd be nice.
So the last bit, this is the public service announcement that I'm gonna say on there. Obviously, this weekend there's lots of events going on. I think there's the London Bills have got an event going on. The Scottish Bills Market are doing walking tours on there. Obviously, with us, the UK Bills, we've got obviously the Wapping Tavern for the 4 days, for the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. If you haven't got tickets for the game on Sunday, the Wapping Tavern is showing the game live, so you can conjure up down there. We do have tickets for the Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday available on the door. So you just come down on the door. It's £10 a.m., £10 ticket. Gets your entry in there. Friday night, we've got, the bus tours. So all those have actually got it, should have had an email through. I've put the schedule up on the socials. Need everyone to be there prompt at 11 o'clock in the morning. And in the evening, we've got the broadcast legend, which is Mike Carlson, in the house.
Hey.
And hopefully a special guest. And then Saturday, we've got the boat parties with another special guest on the boat. There are tickets available for the boat. The second boat, which is priced at £80, usually the price without this is about £110 for that. So you're definitely getting a good rate there. We've got Matt Perino and Ryan Talbot. They're coming down doing a Shout podcast Q&A. And yours truly is going to be doing a special show live, a special Red, White and Buffalo Blue show live from the Wapping Tavern on the Saturday with special guest Matt, with special guest Brian Talbot. So if you've got tickets for it, come down. If not, there are tickets available. Come along, have fun, enjoy. And if you go down to Orange Buffalo in 91 Brick Lane in your Bills gear Friday to Sunday, you get buy one, get one free on their wings.
I should be there Sunday morning. Pre-game, Orange.
So get down there and obviously just have fun. Obviously the Admiralty pub is actually having it, and I'm hopeful going to be giving news in the morning, Friday morning, Saturday, about a meetup on the Sunday. So that's the public service announcement. And I'm just looking at my batch percentage and I've got 2% left. So what we're going to do is, all I can say is keep following us on all the socials. Whatever you're doing, wherever you are watching the game on Sunday, have fun. UK Bills, Buffalo Bills UK, and all that. Follow obviously Robin and myself on our own personal Twitters. As I say, if you're in London, if you spot me, come say hi. I'm going to be at the Wapping all week, but I'm also going to be out and about during the week and on Sunday. Obviously, if you see Robin, say hello to him. If you see Mark, tell him, why the fuck are you not on the podcast recently? All I can say is for Robin, my name's Matt. Have a very good weekend. See you wherever you're going to be at the weekend. And let's go Buffalo Bills.
Go Bills.
Yeah,
no,
not us. You don't know anything about
Mark. You
don't know anything about work.
No. That's who we are.
Bills on three. One, two, three. Bills.